So we're going to do both. We're going to look at the biblical view on polygamy, and then we're going to look at more modern view also and see if it's changed or what. So it's going to be both. This should be interactive, so we'll actually start interactive-wise. So before we even discuss the biblical Judaism's view, I'd like to throw it out to you and ask you to raise your hand in either and kind of make yourself into two groups. Now, if you don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to. So now, the first group, raise your hand if you see positives and advantages to polygamy, to a polygamous lifestyle. And then I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to explain.
Do you mean in this day and time?
That's a good question, right? Maybe it depends on what time period you're living in. That's good. Yes.
What do you mean by now in this day and age?
2018.
Oh, okay.
Or it could be, I really didn't intend that. I really meant in general. The idea of, and I should start by saying that there's polyandry and polygyny, or polygyny and polygenry. Polygamy is a man having multiple wives, whereas polyandry is a woman having multiple husbands. Now, in my limited research, polyandry is very rare. I'm more rare, obviously, than polygyny. I guess we can brainstorm why that would be more rare, but I think the simple understanding is that the man typically, I'm not saying it is nowadays, but typically he's, I guess, the breadwinner of the family, and so he's sort of like the patriarch, the power. And so the wives, usually the man marries the wife, so he would either have one or multiple, whereas a woman having multiple husbands is a little bit strange. It's not really like a natural thing. So that's why.
The man is more.
Okay, so you raised your hand to say you saw some pros, some advantages to polygamy. So do you want to share your reasoning? Like why, like what could be good about it? Can you tap her? I'm asking, you raised your hand, so what are some of the advantages that you see in polygamy?
Man can have more wives, you mean?
Yeah.
He could have one for love and the other one for entertainment.
Okay, all right.
I didn't understand what
I heard what, I'll explain what she said. So she said that on a basic level, so you can have one woman that you love and one woman that you are more attracted to than the first one. And so it works out for the man in that he's able to, have his.
Produce more.
Right. I was going to say he has his soulmate that he connects with on a personal love level, and then he has someone else for other things. So,
but how does that for the woman?
Great response. Right, so I was just gonna.
What did she say?
Don't worry, I'm good at like rephrasing things. So I'll rephrase what everyone says to the whole group. So right, so I was gonna ask. So does before I get to your point, because that was gonna be the second group. Does anyone else have any other?
Yeah. Did somebody mention that if you want to raise the population,
yeah,
that's the only
more children.
Yes.
Yeah, more children. Well, so why can't you have man A and you have woman X and woman Y and woman Z? So woman X is married to man A, and woman Y could marry man A and have so man A will have more children, but woman Y can also marry man B. So, why? And she have children with man B.
Women can only bear maybe one child a year at the most.
Okay. So you're saying, right. So you're saying that he could simultaneously, they can always, be expecting.
Well, the man has got the choices.
Hold on one second. What?
The man has got the choices. What choices the women have?
Right. Okay, so that's kind of similar to what she was saying. I'm going to get to that in a second. But I'm just talking right now about the advantages.
Sexually, he always has a woman available.
Yes.
When one is kneed up, the other snaps.
Right. That's similar to what she was saying, but a little bit different. Yes, that is true, which benefits the man. That's 100% true. So now, anyone else? So now we'll get to the cons, the disadvantages, or meaning philosophically why you would be against polygamy. So a couple of you said, it's maybe not fair for the women because the man has the power and, you have multiple women vying for the same man. And so how much his attention is divided, and more children, yes, is good. But at the same time, it means maybe less attention, right?
There could be jealousy.
Excellent. Between the women, right? It's you're right, because the man's not going to be with multiple women at the same time. He's not going to take them. I mean, he could take them both out to dinner, but how romantic is that? Although it's very interesting. I don't know if you've seen. I mean, obviously you know about the Mormon faith in Utah. So I've actually looked into that a little bit, and to me it's very interesting that sometimes you have a man with four wives, and the women say at least that they're okay with it, and that it brings more love into the home, and they like the multiple children, and
they like it.
Sure, why not?
So they say they like it. Okay, I agree with.
I'm talking about the women.
Yeah, the women. The women say that. Not all of them, and maybe they're just saying this for the camera, that's true, but they're saying that they think it's nice that, they have more, sisters, not quote-unquote, to confide in and to hang out with, and, they like more kids, so that's what they say. I'm sure some of them... But you have abuse also, right? Because the man, is married, let's say he's 50, married to a woman of 48, but then he takes a second wife that's 18. And so, they'll say, that's okay. But, an age difference in marriage is not necessarily a negative thing, but there are some basic, issues when you have that. So I think that's like a cornerstone of their faith, is that a man is supposed to have multiple wives. That's, that's what their religion tells them that they should be doing. Right? And we'll see in Judaism it's a little bit different. But I think it might get back to your point if you're going to be skeptical about it and say that, yeah, who said that rule? The men said that rule and, came up with reasoning because it fitted, it was beneficial for them.
Does that come from those saying to be multiple women?
Oh, you mean like to be fruitful and multiply?
Yes.
Yeah, so multiply the number of women. Right, and thereby multiple kids. Yeah, that's interesting. I never saw it. Well, yeah, I mean that is going to be one of the advantages in Judaism specifically. You can have more children. Yeah, that's true.
You can have three wives and have more fun.
Yeah, yeah, right. Hold on one second. You're in then you.
Talking about, yeah, flies in the face
many traditions.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're good, but it would take years because we have expectations. Like, you say that it's not a disadvantage for an older man, 60 or whatever, and an 18-year-old. I mean, they have different capacity and different interests. It flies in the face of so many things that are so deeply rooted in our culture.
Right.
That it would take, I can't say that it's a terrible thing, but it would take years for this to evolve because of our expectations of the roles. Number one, are so rigid and have been around for so long that it seems that we're arguing something that we'll never get. We cannot see the light on this.
Okay.
Our expectations are so rigid and so firmly entrenched.
Okay, so you're saying, first of all, it's not necessarily practical, and it's definitely not traditional that one man marries one woman around the same age, 5-10 years, and that's what it's supposed to be. Someone, a 50-year-old marrying an 18-year-old is not traditional. It's not...
Well, not only that, but there are things that she's going to want to do, like going skiing.
Traveling, right.
That he is really too old to do.
Right.
And their lives cannot...
All right, come on.
They cannot have mutual enjoyment of the same kind of life. Because,
yeah. Okay. No, very good. Good points. Hold on. You and then you.
But the story of our people.
Hold on. Let's make one at a time.
The story of our people.
Yeah.
Starts with a man in a culture of polygamy who loves his wife so much that he does not take any more wives and doesn't even want a mistress. I think they call them another name then, and it's Abraham and Sarah.
Right.
She told him to take Hagar. He didn't on his own. He loved her.
Okay, so, yeah.
And also, the mother of Samuel, Hannah.
Yeah.
Her husband loved her. I think he probably married her second because if he married Penina first.
Right.
If he married Hannah first, that would, when a man loved a woman,
mm-hmm.
even in the civil society of polygamy, that was it. He didn't take another. It was a social thing, and
he fooled around a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
It's interesting that the very start of our people as a man did not want.
Right. Okay, fine, very good. So let's cover that. Okay, fine. So the first thing is that many figures in the Bible had had multiple wives, right? First of all, there's a verse in the Torah, and it says that a man should not have many wives. And this is, though, referring to a king. A king should not have many wives, should not have a lot of horses, for different reasons. But the inference is that for a king specifically, he shouldn't have too many wives. It doesn't say he should only have one wife. And also, maybe a regular person who's not a king could have multiple wives, and the verse is specifically saying not to, only for a king, which indicates, for sure that it was permitted. Right? It was permitted to have more than one wife. Also, you can't marry two sisters, right?
That's true.
But the inference, again, being that non-sisters is okay, right? Marrying non-sisters is okay. It's only marrying two sisters, right? So, now let's talk about some of the figures that you mentioned and some of the points, right? So we have Avram and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah, he only took Hagar out on Sarah's advice for having children. So yes, he had multiple wives. The second wife could be called a concubine or a pilegesh, that it's only for having children, right, when the first one can't. And we know that the matriarchs of our people didn't have or couldn't have children, right, at first.
What about cousins?
That's a good question. I think from the Bible's perspective, cousins are okay, right? In fact, Sarah was Abraham's niece, right? Sarah was Abraham's niece. So cousins, an uncle to a niece is fine. It's just a nephew and an aunt is not. Now, what the difference is, you know, that's a question. But so I'm not saying that it's recommended, but yeah. So we have, right, so we have Sarah, we have Rebecca and Isaac, right? So that was it, right? And Jacob had four wives, okay? But he only intended to marry one. He only intended to marry Rachel, Rachel. Leah was brought on extra. She's a sister anyway. So he really wasn't intending. It was his father-in-law that sort of threw her in.
Tricked him.
Right. Now, he does grow to have an attachment with Leah, and she has the most children with him, but he only intended for Rachel. The other two, Bilhah and Zilpah, are also concubines, the servants of Rachel and Leah, to have more children. So we know that King Solomon had many wives. However, it was political, right? So that he could make connections with different countries. So he married women from those countries to kind of broaden his reach. So that was political. So on the one hand, we have the legal right, or the legal reality of men marrying more than one wife, but in terms of how it came about, it wasn't necessarily that they said from the outset, oh, let me get three women off the bat. No, it was based on the particular situation, which you're arguing indicates that really, even though it was legal, they only married a second wife or a third wife when it benefited them in terms of from having a children perspective, not just on a whim, just because the situation dictated it, that the first wife couldn't have a child. So Sarah says, for instance, about Hagar, that, oh, I'll raise the child, right? Rachel says to her maidservant, Bilhah, I'll raise the child that you'll have.
What about intelligence?
What do you mean intelligence?
Well, smartness.
In terms of?
How intelligent she is.
Oh, meaning the second wife? Uh-huh. To marry a second wife that's
brighter than the other one.
Okay. I don't know about, it's hard to know about that with the biblical. I guess that could be a reason. I'm not sure about that. Okay. So, yeah. Do you have a? Yeah, so we just talked about that. That each one of them, they had a co-wife, but or more, but it was based on the situation. It wasn't that, again, it wasn't that Yaakov initially, Jacob, wanted to marry four. He wanted to marry one, right? He wanted to marry Rachel. The other ones came along, right? Right, that's a good question. We're going to get to that in a second. Very good. Okay, so we're going to skip ahead to Talmudic times. Okay, we're going to skip a little bit. So in the Talmud, it's very interesting. We don't really see any stories of a figure in the Talmud, any rabbis in the Talmud having multiple wives. We don't really see that. Except I did see there is a source that a Rabbi Tarfon, who you might recognize the name from the Haggadah, from Passover, from Pesach, he's one of the rabbis that have that meeting and that discussion that we talk about in the beginning of the Haggadah. So the Jerusalem Talmud says that he had 300 wives. So I don't know if that's...
I don't think so.
So I don't know if that's an exaggeration. I'd have to, you know, look more into that. But my point is that really, besides for that, we don't really see it. So, okay. Now we're going to get to your question, precisely your question, which is what if, okay, so we established that up to this point, it's permitted, right? We also discussed whether it's advisable or not to have more than one wife, but we said it's legally permitted, right? You see that it happened. So the question is, what if the first wife isn't interested in sharing a husband? Can the woman say, I'd rather not you take a second wife? So it seems to be a debate in the Talmud. So one opinion is that if you marry a second wife against the will of the first wife, you have to divorce the first wife, and you have to give her the ksuba, the money. You know, that comes with a normal case of divorce. So,
do we live in that generation today?
Again, we're going to get to modern times. Right now, we're putting ourselves back in the Talmudic times. So we'll get there. So according to this first opinion, the man can marry the second wife, but he can't just. He has to also divorce the second wife, so it's kind of in between.
The first wife.
He can divorce. He has to divorce the first wife and give her the ksuba. So he technically, according to this opinion, he could divorce the first wife. It's up to him, but he can't just dispose completely. He has to pay her
money.
Oh. I think the microphone's out of battery, so I'll have to talk loud.
So in other words, he has to give her alimony.
Correct, right. We'll see how long it stays on. Okay, so the second opinion, though, is that a man can marry, you know, as many women as he wants, but even if the first wife does not agree, as long as he has the ability to support them all. So from a financial perspective, in Judaism, a man has to support his wife. But if he can do that, if he has the means to do that for multiple wives, so according to this opinion, that's the only requirement for the ability to marry a second wife, even if the first wife isn't necessarily agreeing. Because it's the right of the husband, according to this approach, to marry a second wife. And so,
wouldn't it be good for you?
Good for the man?
Yeah, the man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why he's deciding to do it for different reasons. But we're saying from the woman's perspective, according to this opinion, you know, she has to, you know, she can ask him for a divorce if he's set on marrying the second woman. Even if the first wife is asking to leave, so she can always ask.
Okay, I think it's done.
She can always ask him and communicate to him that, you know, either choose between me and her, but according to this approach, there's a little less power. In the first approach, she can say, it's either me or her, and if you divorce me, then you need to pay the alimony. The second approach, I think the difference is that the second approach would say he doesn't have to necessarily pay the alimony if she says, you know, I want to leave, right? He gives her the get, but he might not have to pay. So again, it's two different perspectives on the amount of say that the first wife would have when the man wants to marry the second wife. Okay. So there's a famous ban. There's a famous ban on polygamy. But before we get to that, I want to just review what we said in the beginning and maybe add a couple things. So this is, I was looking it up yesterday. What are some of the advantages of polygamy? So both from secular and from Jewish perspective, and we said some of them in the beginning, but so the first one would be matchmaking, right? Shiduchim, right? So, and this could even apply nowadays, even though it doesn't happen, but we have the same problem, same challenge, is that some women have a hard time finding, you know, someone to marry, you know, assuming that they're interested in marrying someone. They call it a crisis nowadays. That's why matchmakers are always in business, because they're trying to find a match. But imagine, going back to the way beginning of our talk, that that woman X she can't find anyone. She can't find anyone that she's interested in. But there's man A that's a great guy. He's a great catch, right? And he's successful. The only problem is he's married. So what's she going to do? So if you have polygamy in the right context, so man A can marry her, and then she'll have someone that obviously he's worthy because someone married him. So why not a second? So that could be a real it could be a real advantage, because you can marry someone that's established, even if he has another wife. But you know, if you do it correctly and she's interested, so that can help, you know, match more people up, because you can do multiple wives to one man. Okay, more children in the world, which we said is good, you know, secularly, but for sure Jewishly with Pruravu. But you know, we're supposed to have children. And number three, this is very interesting. It could prevent adultery, right? Because instead of a man philandering with other women, right, chasing other women when he's married, so now if he's interested in someone, he can marry her, and it's properly, and he's not running around outside of the marriage. So that's a point to think about, that it could help in that case, that he, instead of her being, you know, instead of it being an affair, it's just a second wife.
Something kosher that's treif.
That's a good point. Right. You're making something kosher that's treif. That's a really good point. That's a really good point. The only thing I would say, though, in response would be that it's only treif when you actually go ahead with the affair. But if you marry her first and there's genuine interest, then you're bettering a situation that could have been really bad. So, yeah, but I would say maybe it's only treif when it actually happens. But this could prevent that from happening. But I hear what you're saying a little bit. The last one is support system for the women and sharing of household income and responsibilities. What does that mean? You have one woman that's really good at taking care of the home. She could cook up a storm and laundry, and she's very organized, right? It's not just what she has to do; she's really good at it. Another woman is really good at running a business, running a shop, right? So you can have them working together, right? So each one has two children. So the woman that prefers being in the home can watch the kids. The other wife can go run the business, and it's a partnership. She makes some money, and you have another, someone that can always watch the kids. So you can see how it could be a good, quote unquote, business setup. What? No, not servants. It's for everyone, right? It helps, it helps the wife that's working know that she has someone reliable to watch the kids, because it's her, she knows her so well. So that could be a good
If she's married off by her father and she doesn't desire the man, she has less sexual obligation. Men don't like to think of that, but that's also a point.
What do you mean? Can you explain?
You're faced to think the parents with the shotgun.
Yeah, so they set up a girl.
Yeah, so if she doesn't desire him, there's other women taking care of him.
Oh, so you're saying it's she's more there, you know, for, you know, let's say she becomes the housewife and she, you know, helps around the house, but she she's kind of extra. If he desires the other ones more, then what's she doing there?
She may like it if she was married off and the man doesn't please her. We never think of that. But
she's stuck in a marriage where the guy is interested, the husband's interested in others.
A man can't function unless he's interested, but a woman does not have that.
Yeah, I hear it. Right, she could be marginalized and put on the side.
She wants to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No. These are all good points. It's that's why it's a complicated thing. There's pros and there's cons. Yeah.
It only works out. You're setting up an ideal situation.
Yeah, we're just talking about the advantages.
We aren't ideal people. Our feelings change.
Yeah.
We get offended at something that goes on. It's a fluid system.
It's not going to be a perfect, you know, like white picket fence, you two wives.
It's possible, but it's unlikely.
It's unlikely that it's harmonious.
Human failure and human change.
100%. Yeah, so that would be the realist responding to the polygamist by saying, are you sure your wives are really happy? And, you know, is this really, you know, what they want? And are you sure there's no jealousy?
Yeah, no,
you know, we're just talking about the different angles. Okay, so let's get to this famous, this...
They should have been a little bit of the God.
What?
Different wives. More should have been.
No, he only had one. Tzipora.
The daughter?
Tzipora. In last week's Parsha.
Yeah.
That's the only one we hear about with Moshe. And she had, well, the thing is she has, he has two sons right away. So he didn't feel the need to marry another woman. Also, he's sort of married to the entire Bnei Yisrael, Jewish people, because I don't know if he would have had time for another wife. He's talking to God. He's running, you know, to Har Sinai for 40 days and Paro, and I don't know if he would have had time.
The people are driving him crazy.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I don't want to go down this road because it might be total speculation, but who knows if, you know, you have someone like that, like, you know, the president, the head of a company, or Moshe. How is his domestic life and relationships? Meaning, you know, his wife and his kids, how often did he interact with them when he's trying to lead the entire Jewish people and, you know, and communicate with God and doing all the miracles? You know, that's also something. But that's a separate topic. Okay, so in the year... It was around the year 1000, right, A.D. This is after the post-Talmudic times. A guy named, a great rabbinic figure, Rabbeinu Gershom, right, that's actually one of the names of the sons of Moshe. So he says that there's a cherem, a ban, not to marry two women, meaning only... One man, one wife. He says, that's what it has to be. You're not allowed...
Years.
Right, one second.
That's the right thing.
You're not allowed to marry more than one wife. Except, okay, he gives one limitation, which we'll talk about later. But in in 99.9% of cases. One man, one wife, that's it. And, right, and fine. Okay, so... Okay, so the question is, okay, so he makes this ban, right? He says only one wife. Now, he also makes other bans, which are interesting in their own right, which that could, this could be a subject for. So one of his bans, right, he basically said it's, you know, he's living in Germany, again, in the year 1000, Middle Ages, I guess, or before that even. And he's saying he's this great rabbi, and he makes some recommendations, some strong recommendations as to what the community should make some changes in. So one of them is you shouldn't look at another person's mail. So, again, I haven't researched that to see why that was such a prevalent thing, that why that was such a common thing, that that people were looking at each other's mail, but apparently... That was something. So he said, you're not allowed to do that. And also, besides for not marrying more than one wife, directly connected to that, he said you can't divorce a wife against her will, right? Which is very obviously very connected, because both are saying that the husband has a obligation to treat his wives fairly, in a more fair manner than before. So one of them is you can't take a second wife, because as we said, you know, that could create a lot of problems, so just one wife. And also, you can't, so then the guy will say, okay, fine, only one wife, goodbye. And then he'll marry, you know, the one he wanted to. And so the answer is no, she has to agree, right? So it didn't used to be like that, right? It used to be that he can just kind of, you know, give her the get and move on. But he says, no, she has to agree to that, because or else she's going to be on her own. And, you know, so, okay. So there are some limitations on the ban, right? First of all, he's an Ashkenaz Jew, Germany, France. You also have Sephardic Jews, right, in the more, you know, in Israel, North Africa, Spain, right. So there are two different communities. So many sources say that, first of all, the ban was only meant for the Ashkenazic community, not the Sephardic community. He only meant it for sort of his people, right? Not the other community. Also, there's a source that says that for Jerusalem, right, and maybe other parts, but Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, also the ban was not meant for. So it was only meant for the people in his area, right? And also, you talk about the date of the ban, meaning how long, how many years is it that forever and ever, right? Even if after I'm gone, this is Rabbeinu Gershom speaking, that you know, for the next, you know, million years, so this ban is intact, or is it just for right now? Or the near future, but you know, it's not going to be forever. So there's a whole question about how long the ban was for. So some say it was till it was only to the year 1260, which I guess would be 2,000 years. Or you said 1,000 years. So it's a scholars, you know, debate how long, but. So the question is, it's still accepted though, right? It's still accepted.
Didn't his wife save his life or something?
I have no idea. I'll look it up.
Yeah.
I'll look it up. I don't know much about him other than this point. I'll look that up. So again, so it's only for his, so, but even afterwards, even after the year 1260, you don't really see, you know, 1261, you know, 1,000 married men are having a wedding with their second wife. You don't see that, right? So the question is why? Like, you know, why was it so accepted even afterwards. And so the answer is really that it's not really anything, you know, earth-shattering. It's basically that it was accepted, right? And when things are accepted, you know, like customs, you know, there are different customs in Judaism that have been accepted over the years. So that's what it is. So, you know, for nowadays, or even right after this, in the year 1300, 1500, whatever, for a man to marry a second wife, and for him to say, well, you know, the ban is over, it's expired, so I'm going to marry a second wife, it, you know, the custom was not to, and even though it technically was over, you still continued, because I guess it made sense to them that you should only marry one wife. That made sense to them. And it was for the reasons that we said. Marrying more than one wife comes with a lot of issues. So that's why it's continued to be that way in Jewish practice. But we're going to get to... okay, so then you can marry a second wife. We're talking about simultaneously married to more than one wife.
They also lived in a Christian world.
Yes.
Where it's totally monogamy.
Right.
And I'm sure that had an effect also.
So,
because you have hardly any divorces also. Because in the Catholic Church it's forbidden.
Right. We're going to get to that point in a second. So why did he institute the ban? Why did Rabbeinu Gershom do it? Right? So we've kind of said this already. But first of all, it was instituted to prevent people from taking advantage of their wives. Right? If you have more than one wife, so you can manipulate and you can... you can take advantage, you can abuse... Right. Also, it led to infighting between the wives. Right. It, as we said before, it's not always a peachy household with more than one wife with a husband. Also, he was concerned that the husband would be unable to properly provide for all of his wives.
Provide for the second wife, for the children who comes after. And that's you have to.
Especially during times of exile, when we're prosperous, okay, fine, that's one thing. But he was concerned, what if, men would suddenly, with two or three wives, would suddenly lose their fortune, and now what are they going to do? They don't not only have one wife to support, they have three. But
many wives, can they abuse the men? By law, I say.
What do you mean, can they? I mean, you're not supposed to abuse anyone. But I guess, yeah, I mean, right, that could be another reason. And maybe it's not the best idea for the husband, even though he thinks it's a good idea at first. But, you know, relationships are hard enough. One man, one wife, you know, to always get along. So now two, it could be a very challenging situation. Yeah, that's for sure. Now, there's also a concern, more of a halacha concern, that a man could end up, and this is kind of far-fetched, but if he marries a wife in, I'll just give a modern example, he marries a wife in New York, and then he, goes to China and marries another wife. That wouldn't really happen. He marries a wife who's from, you know, who has kids in New York. Then he has, marries another wife whose kids are living in New Jersey, right? Which are very close to each other. Well, what happens if the kids, 20, 30 years later, if his stepkids, if he has too many wives and too many kids and they're kind of spread out in different areas, who knows, they might come to marry each other. Again, it's far-fetched, but it could happen. Because, especially back then, you didn't have cell phones or email. It's hard to keep track of people. So you have three wives, and between them, 9 children. So, and people move around, maybe they'll come to marry each other, and that's an issue. You know, a half-brother and a half-sister, whatever. So, and then the last thing is what you said, although it's not, there are some that argue against it, that some say that since in the Christian world, their practice was only to have one wife, and if the Jews had more than one wife, that they would face attacks from the Christians. So we said, let's just do what they're doing and not upset them. But some authorities they don't necessarily accept that view, maybe because they'll say, you know, that's not why we would change what was permitted. That's not what he would have done. But it might be. It's possible.
It could be psychological, not the force. It could be that they're surrounded by all these monogamous things. It could be psychological.
Why should we start to be different? And yeah, right. Right. That's a good point. Right. It just wasn't done. So he said, let's make sure it's never done. Again, we said from a secular perspective, it could be confusing for the children. The quality time with each wife is divided. Okay, fine. Now, point number one on the ban is that how could he have made a decree on French communities? He lived in German communities. So we said that France and Germany were all part of Ashkenaz, right? But really, it's complicated because Ashkenaz is, I think, technically just Germany. France is considered Ashkenazi, but it's part of Germany. But basically, the question is, he made a ban for, like, you know, millions of people, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, even outside of his immediate community. So how could he have done that? So one of the authorities says it's because all of the communities accepted. They said, this makes sense, we should do it. And again, once you accept things in Judaism, so it sort of becomes like cemented. It's kind of like wet cement that slowly settles. So when you have a custom that is accepted, slowly it settles, right? Like for women to like hear the shofar, things like that maybe they technically are exempt from, but they've done it, so that's what we do. So it's things like that. right. Okay. Now, we said there's one exception to the ban, which is interesting. I think it has happened, but very rarely, which is that, let's say you have a woman who unfortunately is mentally incapacitated, and so the husband, very sick, but she's still living, and the man is interested in marrying a second wife. Not necessarily that he's not dedicated to the first wife, but listen, it's hard to, you know, have a relationship with someone that is sick, and maybe she's in a institution, but he's still married to her. So let's say he wants to get a second wife. So Rabbeinu Gershom said that there's one situation in this case, if he gets 100 rabbinic signatures, 100 rabbis to look at the situation and to see that it's correct what he's doing and he's doing it for the right reasons, then if they give him 100 signatures, and he added that they have to be from like 3 different towns, they couldn't all be from like one place. So really, he needed a consensus, right, rabbinically, that he's allowed to take a second wife in this case, when the wife is really, you know,
mentally ill.
So then that would be allowed. So, but you see that besides for that, in most cases, it would not be allowed. Now, so now, let's take the last two points are, let's take a step back and let's see what the Jewish law was before the ban. So we're kind of going a little bit out of order. Before, yeah, so we're going to get to that in a second. We're kind of doing this out of order, but before the ban, right? So what was the law basically before the ban?
Okay.
If the ban was not in place.
No, it's a good okay. So, I mean,
A man.
Ma'am, you're on the phone.
Okay, yes. Bye.
A man can marry. This is the Shulchan Aruch, right? This is like code of Jewish law. So before the ban, besides for the ban, a man technically can marry many wives as long as he can support all of them, right? So that's number one. He has to be able to support all of them. However, the sages have given some good advice that a man should not marry more than four wives. Four. So even before the ban on where it was allowed to marry more than one wife, not more than four, right? Okay. Why? So again, it has to do with more of like the marital type relationships that you know, it would be too many wives. It wouldn't be the attention between the husband and the wife at that time. And in a place, he continues, he says, in a place where the custom is only to marry one wife, you're not allowed to marry a second wife. So he also says, even, you know, that you're supposed to recognize and respect the custom in your community, right? That's important. Now, there's a question on whether the women can waive their financial rights and allow the husband to marry another wife. Meaning, let's say the woman says, wife number one says to the husband, I know that you're interested in wife number two, and I'm okay with that. And I know we're going to have maybe less money in the house, right? You're not a wealthy man. So she says, it's okay if we're going to, you know, have to scrounge a little bit more, but that's okay, right? Because I love you and I respect your decision to marry this other wife. So the question is she allowed to do that, right? Because we said that he can only marry the second wife if he can provide for her, right? But let's say the first wife says, it's okay, even if you're going to be under the minimum, right? Even if we're going to have to split the minimum, it's okay. So the question it boils down to whether it's the obligation of the man to support both wives, even if they say not, but he needs to do the right thing, basically, and support both, make sure he can do that. Or is it really up to the wives, and they can, you know, negotiate? So, again, it's a debate. but he thinks that that according to the main authorities, it would be dependent on the wives, because the concept that the man has to support the wife is in a normal situation, but it's for the benefit of the wife. And in matters of monetary issues, whenever you're talking about money, so you can always say it's okay. You can always be mochel. You can always forgive your monetary rights. So the women would be allowed to say, you know, we'll figure out the money, but it's okay, you can marry that second wife. Okay, so another question, which we won't get into, but it's fascinating, is what, we have this concept of yibum, right?
Of what?
Yibum, levirate marriage. Oh. What does that mean? If a man marries a woman, the man dies without, and they didn't have a child, so, and the man has a younger brother, younger brothers. So the younger brother, I think it's, if there are multiple ones, that you have to start with the oldest one that's living, that survives the older brother. He has a choice. He has to do one of two things. He either has to marry his sister-in-law, right? That his brother that passed away was married to. He either has to marry her, or he has to do something called chalitza, right? Which is a very interesting ceremony where she takes off his shoe and she spits into it and she says that you aren't doing what you're supposed to do. Because what's the point of this whole thing? The point of him marrying her is to have a child or children that could be...
go to his credit.
Yeah, that would have the name of his brother that didn't have children. And so you would be sort of continuing the line from your older brother that didn't have children with his wife, so you would have a child with...
Why does he have to spit at her shoe?
No, so that's if he wants to marry her and they both agree, that's what you're supposed to do. But if, let's say, he doesn't want to marry her or she doesn't want to marry him, but it's more if she doesn't want to marry her, because I think the assumption is that... she wants to be married, so she would marry the second brother. But if, let's say, he doesn't want to marry her, so then she spits in his shoe, and she has to say, you know, you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? You're supposed to be marrying me, right? So this is obviously if she's, So, okay, so it's a whole tractate, it's a whole 100 plus pages in the Talmud debating on different situations, if there's, you know, multiple brothers, and if there's money involved, and if there were multiple wives.
What if she doesn't want the brother?
If she doesn't want to, so then she doesn't have to, she doesn't have to marry him.
She can't marry anyone else.
Well, there's ways out of it. I think, he could do chalitza, right?
Well, if he'll do chalitza.
Well, yeah, he'll do it. If she doesn't, right, you're saying you're saying maybe he can hold her hostage kind of thing. I don't think he'll do that. I mean, either he wants to marry her or he doesn't. So, presumably, they'll figure it out. But the question is, what if, how does this relate to polygamy? Because if the man is already married, so the second wife, his sister-in-law, would be a second wife. So the question is, would that be allowed, right? Because you're doing yibum, what you're supposed to do, but it's a second wife. And nowadays, maybe you're not supposed to marry a second wife. So that's a whole question about how they intersect, what he should do in that case. Okay. So I think, the main reason, the main solution would be that he should do the chalitza, which may, in fact, be the recommended approach nowadays anyway, right? Even if he's not married. So that's a whole other thing. Now, the Rama, who's a rabbi from Krakow, I think 1700s, very important, Ashkenazic decisor. So he basically says that the ban still applies, right? Because we said, does the ban still apply? Did it go away? He says it still applies, and you're supposed to follow it, okay? However, there's a famous rabbi, and with this we'll close, a famous rabbi in Israel who's quoted by, there's a thing called Jewish Home, which is a community in Israel that says we should be reinstituting the idea of having more than one wife, of polygamy, and that it's a positive thing in the Jewish tradition, that a man should have more than one wife, as we said before. So this rabbi says, what's one reason that we should still have polygamy, that we should have polygamy? As we said before, let's say a non-religious, man who doesn't, care, he'll have an affair with another woman. So if he marries her, like we said before, that's a way for him to do it legally. And also he says that that the time of the ban has expired and that the ban is followed now only as a custom, but not more than that. So if you have a custom, could be followed, but it could also be overturned. And, if you have enough people saying it should be overturned, and he says it should be overturned. Also, he quotes other rabbis that say that the ban itself is incorrect and that they would have eradicated the ban on polygamy and that polygamy is a good thing in the Jewish community and we should have it. And the ban was a mistake, and they don't think it's a good idea. So there's some other just tangential points. The Yemenite community, there's a whole material on if the Yemenite community in Israel, if they're still doing polygamy because that was their tradition. So the whole question is, how common was that? But and apparently there are some rabbis in Israel, more on the Sephardic side, that actually did have, don't tell anyone, that did have multiple wives. And this is even in the past 100 years. And apparently the Bedouin community in Israel, who are like the Arabs that are kind of, we consider them Israelis in some respects, also have more than one wife, so it does exist. Now, the last thing is that it's interesting that since the wife has to agree to a divorce from the husband, so it turns out that combined with the other part of the ban of polygamy, right? It turns out that a man, if the wife doesn't want to be divorced from the husband, so then the man is also stuck, right? We talk about how women are unfortunately stuck, and this could be a topic for another class about aguna and Jewish divorce, and how women, if they don't get the divorce, are stuck in the marriage, and that's a whole topic nowadays. But it turns out that the men are somewhat stuck because if the woman doesn't want to get divorced and they're not allowed to take another wife, so they're also kind of in this relationship. A lot of times the woman is the one that wants the divorce and the man won't give it to her for reasons that we could talk about. But if the woman does not want a divorce, so then the man is kind of stuck. So, and he's only stuck because of the other part of the ban against polygamy. Because if he could marry another wife, he would marry another wife, and who cares? But he can't. So it's in a way it provided what Rabbeinu Gershom thought it would, which is concern and less abuse from the husband to the wife. And so the bottom line is that. In current Israeli society, your polygamy is illegal. All right, you can't do it. And most Jewish communities, you don't have polygamy, but you do have this group that wants to reinstitute it, and they say it's great, and we should have it. And but I don't think. They have so many people. I'm sure they've gotten some people to get married and multiple wives, and they've probably done it very secretly. You don't hear about it, but for the most part, it's not really practiced nowadays for the reasons that we said before, mainly about maintaining the harmony in the house and preventing abuse of the man to multiple wives, you know, one wife is, you know, and one husband, it's enough. You know, you don't need necessarily to bring in more. And so even though there was polygamy in the biblical times, but, you know, since this ban, so we've kind of stopped doing it. Okay.